Welcome to the Proper Mental Podcast. Normalizing open and honest conversations about mental health by having open and honest conversations about mental health. Welcome to episode 8 of Proper Mental, and our guest this week is Dr. Joe Delaney. Dr. Joe is a consultant in integrative medicine, and he's the UK's first NHS specialist in integrative health practice. And if you don't know what that means, that's fine, because neither did I had to Google it, and Google told me that it means combining two or more things to form an effective system. So, Joe deals with the neuroscience of stress and addictive behavior and how to manage these behaviors. And he uses things like mindfulness and some ancient yogic breathing practices to kind of help you balance out your body and deal with stress and addictive behavior. I like to think of Joe as kind of like the science behind the spiritual. So a lot of this stuff in yoga is like these 10,000 year old breathing techniques that are happening in yoga studios up and down the country and all over the world. And and Joe is describing what is happening in your body. So as part of the conversation here, we look at stress and what is happening in the body with your biochemistry when we feel stressed and when we feel anxious, because, you know, the human body is just a chemistry set, right? And sometimes with mental health, we might have a bit too much of something or not enough of something, or something is like chemically out of balance. And Joe really like digs down into what's happening within us, you know, the science behind it. And also what is amazing about this chat is that Joe like gives us some tools as well, you know, so when these things are happening to us, you know, a little technique or two that we can use to maybe, balance out a little bit and over time change things, change the way we feel to in turn change the way we think. So it's a fascinating conversation. Joe also jumps into his story. So we find out a little bit about him and how he kind of got into these things. And his story alone is a journey in itself. And we, you know, chat about a bit about his work in the local community. He does some work at sort of grassroots level around by us and in the local college as well and stuff like that. And so like both Chris and I had met Joe before. So we knew this was going to be good, right? We asked him on for a reason. He's incredibly engaging. He's really funny. He's like an internationally recognized speaker. So, you know, he's really got this stuff down, and it was just an absolute pleasure to have him on. It was really, really good fun, which is a weird thing to say considering like how deep we dive into science and, you know, addiction and mental health and all that sort of stuff. But no, it was great, and you're really, really going to enjoy it. And if you'd like to know a bit more about Joe, you can connect with him on Facebook at Joseph Delaney. He's on Instagram as at Dr. Joe Delaney, or you can check him out on his website, which is www.drjoedelaney.com. And it's a great episode you're really going to enjoy. In some other news, I had an email this week from Apple, and Proper Mental has actually hit the Apple mental health chart at number 234. So if you're thinking 234, well, you've got a long way to go. That is true. We have got a long way to go. But, you know, this is only episode 8. And, you know, 3 out of those 8 have been me and Chris sort of chatting shit to each other, really. So to get anywhere near any sort of chart is a massive accomplishment. We've said from day one, we want people to hear this in case it might help them. It might help them have their own version of this conversation and maybe get some help. So, you know, if we go near the charts, it's a step in the right direction. Now, the charts are based on you know, downloads, subscribes, listens, reviews, all that sort of stuff, really. So, you know, thanks for everyone who's helped us out so far. And if you could continue to help us out, I feel quite inspired to have a run at this chart now. I think I'm going to kind of make it my mission to climb up higher than 234. So if you could do any of those things, if you could leave us a review or, you know, like download and, yeah, just make a bit of a noise online for us, that would be great. If you're listening on Apple right now, hit pause, go back to our podcast page, and hit subscribe, and leave a review. It only takes a few seconds. You can go and do it right now. In fact, do it now. I'm just going to wait here. So pop me on pause and go. Did you do it? Fantastic. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. I'll make sure I give you a shout out on our social media. Speaking of which, you can find us at Proper Mental Podcast and all the usual places. I think that's everything I've got to tell you. So, yeah, let's go for it. Here is episode 8 of Proper Mental with Dr. Joe Delaney. Thank you for listening. Enjoy. Okay, so we're joined today on the Proper Mental Podcast by Dr. Joe Delaney. And Joe, I would like you to, if possible, introduce yourself, please, mate, because you do a lot of things for a lot of different people, and I don't want to make a hash of it, so it might be a bit better coming from your good self.
Yeah, thanks very much, Tom and Chris, and thanks very much for inviting me along. I've got no idea. It's always a worry about what's going to come out of my mouth, really. You know, but we'll just have to go with it. You will be able to edit this, won't you, in certain bits? Because they call me, they call me Dr. Effing Joe, you know. And I often forget myself when I'm in the flow, you know, and all sorts of very, you know, descriptive language comes out. But anyway, what do I do? People ask me that. I'm sort of an independent consultant in integrative medicine now. But it wasn't always like that. People say, well, explain what you mean by that. And I say, well, I'm a consultant in psychoneuroendocrino-immunohematology. And then they normally laugh and start walking away, you know. But I try and explain to them that, you know, a holistic approach to me and an integrative approach is where all your bits and pieces, right, are working with one another, either in harmony or not in harmony, you know. And if they're not in harmony, then you feel disturbed and diseased. You know, and to me, dis-ease, right, when you're ill at ease with yourself, it impacts not only on your physical body, but on your psychology as well. So ill at ease and dis-ease in your mind actually sort of translates into physical illness. I see that clearly now. And when I say mind-body medicine, because sometimes integrative medicine is called mind-body medicine, I don't mean mind and body. I mean a continuum. You know, it's mind, body in one word, really. So mind, body, body, mind. So how we think manifests as how we send signals to our consciousness. That's the way we think and the way we process information and how we perceive the world. To me, I think our consciousness actually transforms into electrical signals. And those electrical signals then will actually send information, depending on the quantity and the quality of those thoughts. It will send specific information to our endocrine glands, you know, our seven major glands. They will then secrete biochemical substances to the degree that the thoughts send electrical signals to the glands. The biochemistry is basically a representation of our thinking. Are you with me so far? Okay, yeah. So then we've got this sort of soup, you know, in our plasma of all these various biochemical substances that will then impact upon how our stem cells pick up that information. And stem cells, right, because they impact upon the way DNA expresses itself, right, then that will impact upon the proteins that are expressed, which then become us. Because the proteins will latch on to other things like macronutrients and minerals, which then will form us. So in a way, as we think, so we become. And not only that is, it will also cause us, the way we feel will cause us to make decisions which will either improve the quality of life or take away from the quality of life, you know, take us closer to death. Or take us closer to life, you know. And that's where life and death decisions, to me, it means, are you choosing what enlivens you, what gives you vitality, what you're enthusiastic about, what you're being honest about? Are you being you and choosing from you? Sound like a priest here, don't like a lecture, right? But, you know, are you choosing life for yourself and something that you really, really enjoy from your depth? Or are you listening to everybody else who's telling you how to live your life and becoming as miserable as sin? You know, and that's where I was for years. You know, Tom, you know, we've met before, we've talked before. And the reason I'm in this business now is many years ago, I tried to take my own life after listening to external experts telling me how I should live my life and what would be best for me. And not only was that, that happened from the day I was born, in that good intentionedly, my parents tried to guide me in a way that they thought would be successful for me. And it wasn't. It was based, if you like, on if you make loads of money, you'll be happy. If you get a job with a good reputation, you'll be happy. If you marry the right sort of person, right, you'll be happy. You know. And so I listened to external sources of information, and it basically took me to the point where I tried to kill myself. You know. So I was just talking to Chris before. I've realized, and it took me a long, long time, right, that I had to metaphorically decapitate myself and stop listening to my head and to external sources of information and start for the first time being true to my own self, you know, to thine own self be true. And my journey took me into alcoholism, into taking all sorts of substances, both over the counter and under the counter, just to try and change my mood state so I could fit in and feel a bit better. And that's why I've gone through that process, got the t-shirt, written the book, all that sort of business. But also, I've been fortunate enough to find myself in a field where I'm trying to apply the neuroscience to the science of what goes on between your ears. I'm sorry if I've gone on there, mate, but that's where I'm up to today. And, you know, there's other things that I've done on this journey that have helped me to understand what a whole human person is, not just some sort of fragmented one.
Yeah, sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. It's something that we've, in a lot of our chats so far, we find a few common themes, a few words, a few situations that seem to come up for people, regardless of where you live, what you do, what sex, race, what part of community, anything at all. And there seems to be a lot of stuff around authenticity and values. And so much of modern life seems to be a real, like a square peg in a round hole scenario. And the more you try and force that, the more the wheels slowly over time start to come off, you know, is that kind of, yeah, that's what that makes me think of really when you're talking, you know, that living by other people's values and society's idea of what something should be. You can only live a lie for so long, even if you don't know that it's a lie, right?
Yeah, and that's where I was for many years. I was in something called denial, you know, and people around you can see that you're in denial, except yourself, you know. That's the thing about it. And people tried to say to me for years, they said to me, if you carry on at this pace, Joe, you know, you're going to have a nervous breakdown. And I used to think, what are you talking about? Right. I'm in a posh job here. All right. I'm doing a PhD. I'm becoming important. We're getting loads of money. We've got like a 5-bedroom house in a posh area with 2 cars and all this nonsense. You know, we're going on 3 holidays a year. What are you moaning at me for? Right. And they said, but Joe, you know, you're not available to us anymore. We don't know where you are. You know, you're not paying attention to the children. You're not paying attention to me. You seem to be lost. And I realize now that I was lost. I was a lost soul, if you like. I understand that whole sort of feeling of I was a lost soul, right? I was basically, there's an expression, know all knows, oh, don't say that, Joe. I was a knowledgeable idiot, right? In that I knew a lot about medicine, I knew a lot about biology, biochemistry, all that stuff. But about myself, I didn't have a clue. And it took me 8 weeks in a psychiatric department to be reconnected to my essential self. And I refer to that not in a religious way, but I call that my soul self, right? And now, because I've basically thrown my head away and all those ideas that had accumulated in my memory over time, I don't work generally off memory anymore, because that's a trap. Because living from memory is living from the past. Now I try and mindfully live with how I feel moment to moment. And so I haven't prepared for this. I'm not making it up. It's just coming out, you know. There's an expression I like, is to live extemporaneously. And what that means is living life without a script, not planning anything at all, turning up and using your innate abilities and your innate resourcefulness to get through the situation that's present right in front of your eyes, you know, using your own skills and abilities that are unique to me. You, Tom, will have different skills and abilities. You, Chris, will have different ones. The idea would be is I use my individualness and I work alongside yours and yours. And we, you know, we work our different skills together for one purpose. And if you're in the sort of service industry or the health industry, to me, that's about helping to facilitate an environment where people grow themselves into the best they can be. And I know that's a bit cliched, but I honestly believe that now, that most people have got no idea of what they're strong with. They just focus on what's wrong with them, you know?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, you know, another key word there is environment, right? Because you can't heal in the environment that made you sick. And yet, if you don't know you're sick, you subconsciously make those choices that negatively impact your environment, and you create this like negative circle rather than a positive one. You know?
Yeah,
yeah. So how did you start to learn about all this stuff, Joe? Because it's very one thing I found with my struggles in the past is that there's so many resources out there, and people say these things like, "Oh, you know, what you need is within," and all this sort of stuff. But when you say that to someone who's not doing very well, you kind of think, "Oh, well, I'm like." How do I even start? You know, where did you begin? You know, to work through this stuff.
Well, what happened to me was I got addicted to alcohol and all sorts of other substances. You know, I say both over the counter and under the counter, anything that made me feel differently, just to try and get away from the reality of who I was and how toxic I was, you know. And I ended up, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I'm just saying that this is what my journey was, you know. And it was in AA, after I came out of the psychiatric department. I'd been to AA before, and I didn't have a clue what they were talking about. But when I went back this time, it's almost like a light went on. I thought, my God, these people have been trying to tell me this for the last 9 years. It took me 9 years of visiting AA and trying my best to change, to understand that the change has got to come from deep within. But the way you do it is, it's not about thinking, it's all about feeling. And what I had to basically do is, I went through a set program, and I basically cleaned my side of the street and apologized for all the misdeeds I'd done, if you like, you know. And that started to clear a space in my mind. And I felt like I was being driven rather than from my head downwards, like a top-down approach. I felt like that something was starting to guide me from my heart or my soul, you know. And this sounds a bit, it could be religious, this. I'm not at all a religious person, but I do believe in spirituality, if it means intuition. Because in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, for anybody who understands psychology, right, there are various stages that a human in natural growth should go through before they reach self-actualization and freedom. Well, I was blocked in the middle stage, whereby I couldn't become independent because I was so hooked on listening to other people's advice on how I should live. The person I listened to more than anybody else was my mum. God bless her, you know. And I used to run ideas past my mum, and she'd go, ooh, you don't want to do that, son. Ooh, what will they think of you? Ooh, West Kirby, they're all posh in West Kirby, and don't ever go to Caldy because they're even posher. So I was brought up in that mentality, you know, by good-intentioned people, nothing wrong with that, but I was brought up in a culture and an environment of fear, right, and emotional reactivity. And I realised that the way I had to do it, I had to grow up. And when I'm saying grown up, I don't mean grow up and behave. I mean, I had to grow from the place where I was obstructed. And my journey has been about every time I sense apprehension or fear now, I've got to stop and mindfully breathe in a certain way. That was the basis of my PhD. That creates more space so you can see more choices, so you can make more healthy choices. But every healthy choice I had to make was by going through fears, going through childhood fears and going through childhood blocks. And what I didn't like, Tom and Chris, more than anything else is I didn't feel like feeling emotionally disturbed. So I used to dodge what I had to do and drink to try and anesthetize myself, smoke or eat just to try and quell temporarily those feelings so I didn't have to deal with it there and then, you know. And I put a load of weight on. I lost everything. I lost my wife. I lost my job in the NHS. I lost my kids. I lost my freedom. I lost my house. And I ended up sleeping on a park bench in Victoria, you know, in Central Park in Wallasey, you know, and I was there for months and I didn't know what the hell was going on. All I could think of is, where can I get some drink to take these horrible feelings away from me? And I just want to say this for your audience. If anybody's out there feeling depressed and stressed and anxious and wanting to maybe do themselves in, hang on a second, right? Just try what I'm suggesting here. And it's basically tapping on your heart like that, taking a big deep breath in and a big deep breath out and dropping your shoulders. I know this sounds a bit daft, but don't knock it till you've tried it. And then almost tapping on your heart and saying, is there anybody in there? Right. You know, because I honestly believe that the deeper you go into relaxation, into this heart focus, the more a specific sort of intelligence emerges. That's what's happened to me. And I've done this with thousands of people now over time. And it's transformed their life by listening to their honest and essential selves rather than all the bollocks that's going on in their heads. You know, I don't have to go on. You'll have to say, shut up, Joe. We want to speak, you know.
No, not at all. Not at all. So these, you mentioned the people you work with, and I know you do some work in the, like, at the local community as well. Do you think you've seen a rise in, in recent years over stuff like, you know, depression, anxiety, you know, the sort of the poster children of mental health, for want of a better expression?
Yeah, no doubt about it, mate. No doubt about it. It's exponentially rising, and it's rising in men as well. Generally, men. Say from 38 to 50 years of age, because, you know, some people are losing their jobs. They're almost metaphorically feeling emasculated now because they feel disempowered and they just feel useless, you know. And my thing is that if you can just go deep within and almost inquire at the depth, give us a clue now on the best direction for me to go here, because this is really about evolution and adaptation to what's going on now, you see, because I was stuck in, oh God, I hope it changes. What we're going through now is never going to change or go back to how it was. No doubt about that. So it's almost like we've got to say, all right, I accept what's going on. How can I improve the situation I'm in here? Right. And the idea would be is not to listen to the experts on the telly. This is only a suggestion. You don't, I mean, I can't tell anyone what to do, but I can make strong suggestions. Listen deep within and almost get a sense of that the solution you're looking for is just below your nose. Right. You know, and when I say nose, I'm spelling nose, K-N-O-W-S, because you don't need to go into your knowledge base. You need to go into your wisdom base. And that's in a different place. That's a deeply heart-centered. See, what I've learned is, in my understanding is, in the psychology, we get born with instincts. That's where we are when we're children. We're born with a pre-programmed set of hereditary instincts for our basic protection and survival. Then as we grow a bit more, another instinct comes on for procreation, you know, and intimacy. And then we move up to the next instinct, which is basically to belong to society. These are programs in us, right, in order to help us to be fully human. Now, the next one is independence, is when you leave the group and you start to make your own way in life based upon your own thinking. And I think that I was blocked, you see, in that 3.5 state because I kept circling in. Oh, right, I'll have to read this book. I'll have to listen to this person. I'll have to get them to guide me. And every time I did something else based upon somebody else's suggestion, I went backwards, because the idea at that point in Maslow's hierarchy is to stop long enough to turn your eyes inwards and say, what's the best way for me to go forward here based upon my talents, my skills, my resourcefulness, and based upon what's best for me? Does this make sense? And then I believe that's the point of crucifixion, if you want to do religious things, but it's almost like a rock bottom that every human has to go through. In order to the rock bottom to me is like the ceiling to the next dimension. And that's when you start to expand then as an individual. Now, there are unscrupulous types who would want to keep you in that third dimension. You see what I mean? Because fear is associated with, if you don't behave the rest of the way the herd is behaving, you'll be an outcast. And I'm saying to everybody, whatever you do, please become a rebel. Please become an outcast. Start getting ideas for yourself and thinking for yourself, and use those to overcome fear step by step, because empowerment is, you know yourself, if you start doing something that you've always been afraid of and you start doing it, you feel this new sense of power coming in. So your self-confidence builds, your self-esteem builds, you start to stand on your own two feet. Instead of a wishbone, you develop a backbone, and then you can start going forward then. See, I'm good with the, I've learned these phrases over time.
Indeed. You know what I mean? But that was a crack of that one.
Yeah, but the point about it is things like Tai Chi, you know, gentle, flowing, smooth. All this is about re-energizing or allowing this deeper energy that's been compressed and repressed for years. It's allowing it to start filling your system, filling your bones, filling your muscles, filling your cells with who you are. And I know that sounds a bit weird now, but I know the feeling of it. So I'm writing a book at the moment. It's not an academic book, because my academic colleagues have said, you can't call it that. So I'm going to give you the title now. It's called the F Off Approach to Health and Happiness. And F Off stands for focus on feelings first, right? And that's the F Off. It's a sort of paradoxical double-edged sword where you can say to people who are trying to push information on you, you can say F Off. And they say, what do you mean? You can say, I'm focusing on feelings first, right? But that's what I'd say to you. You can actually tune in to a vital, enthusiastic feeling that emerges from the depth that will carry you forward. Now, I don't know whether this is making sense, but normally, intuitively, people can sort of understand what I'm getting at here.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, definitely. I think just to rewind a little bit, one of the things that you mentioned before was like looking elsewhere for answers. Because you're looking to other people for answers, you don't find them, so you end up trapped. And I think, again, that's something really common, is that trapped place, that place in the middle, that when you can't go one way and you can't go other, and then that's when people start feeling like there is no other way out, when they can't deal with being there, and it just causes so much stress. And it was, you know, stress is something I wanted to chat to you about today, Joe, as well, because talking about like the physical and the mental sides of stress, because I think to understand this better, if you know what's happening in your body, in your physical body, you know, what's happening physiologically, it's much easier to understand what's happening emotionally, if that makes any sort of sense.
Yeah. Well, two people can be in the same circumstance. One can enjoy it, one can be terrified by it. So that means, even though it's the same circumstance, right, we're perceiving it in a different way. So this is really about perception, really. And there's a lot of people who are just basically afraid of the whole world. So they're basically constantly in a state of chronic fight and flight and hypervigilance, always looking out for the next problem that comes in. So, you know, if you're not relaxed, you're just living on the defensive. When you live on the defensive, you can't have creative thoughts, because there's no energy that goes to your higher mind, if you like, or your cerebral cortex or your neocortex, whatever you want to call that. That bit that imagines and, you know, imagines a better future, you can't be in that when you're in your midbrain, sometimes called the monkey mind. You know, it's called, I like the phrase, it's called an amygdala hijack, it's called, right? And what that is when you're in fight or flight, you're just perceiving from the mid-mind on the defensive. So your body is receiving signals to say you need to be tense here just in case. So what happens is your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure increases, your throat tightens, your breathing becomes more rapid and shallow. And if you're in that state all the time, you then, it's almost as if your body's training itself to be like that. You know, if you heard the expression, when the wind changes, it'll stick like that. Well, that's basically what happens is, that we are subtly training our physical body based upon our perceptions. So if you perceive the world in a threatening way, your body will take on the shape of the threat. Okay. And that will bring with it chronic muscle tension, myofascial pain syndrome. I know Chris understands this. You do as well, Tom. You know, we're racked with pain then, and we can't understand. So we'll go to a remedial massage therapist, and temporarily for a day or two, we'll feel better. However, if your head's still cycling in the same old way, you're just going to put it back in. Now, unscrupulous massage therapists will be glad about that, because you'll keep going to them every other week and making a bow off them, right? But the point about it is, My job is to help therapists not only to do the massage, but also to try and help people understand how the way they're thinking and processing information is actually causing the problem. It's really, really difficult to get that across to people because most people are in denial. Right. I'm not quite sure what the question was, but what I'm saying is, so fight or flight, how can we use a simple physical technique to disengage emotionally and therefore reset ourselves to homeostasis and normal balance for us as an individual? How can we do it? This is how you do it, boys. You put your hand on your heart like that, right? And you just tap. And then if you want to, and I teach this to kids as well, you can put your other hand on your heart so it looks like a bird that's flying or an angel or whatever. And so you put your hands on your heart, put a little bit of pressure there just to try and tune in to the center of your heart. And you just breathe in, 2, 3, 4, 5, stop. Out, 2, 3, 4, 5, stop. And you do that for 3 10-minute sessions a day. And it's the out-breath that disengages you from the emotional reaction. Now, the out-breath is associated, and I'll say technical words here, the out-breath is associated with an increase in vagal tone, which is parasympathetic nervous system activity, which is associated with the opposite of the fight or flight response. It's called the rest and digest response. And the R also stands for rest, recuperation, and all those things beginning with R, right? And so to bring that back into sort of simple terms is we need to breathe out more than we need to breathe in, because it's the out breath that brings with it the relaxation. And if you look at people who are doing things like Tai Chi, as they're moving their arms up like that, they're breathing in. And as they move their arms down, they're breathing out. So 3 10-minute sessions for a month, and I swear to you, your head will change. Because I call this hacking physiology to change psychology. And what that does is, if you can change the way your heart works to change the way that your head works, you'll get a better menu of options, a big expanded menu of options, so you can choose more healthy choices as you go along. And it's not then driven by emotional engagements and unconscious processing. It's driven by consciousness. Does that make sense? I don't know whether that was a bit complicated.
No, not at all. That makes a lot of sense. Because I suppose, you know, modern life, we are just constantly, whether we know it or not, whether we're on the conveyor belt, we are overstimulated as modern humans, like completely. Even like a walk to the shop, you're bombarded by lights and signs and cars and noise. And I always think about driving, you know, so the human brain is designed to travel as fast as you can run. And yet you'll jump in a tin box and ping down the motorway at 70 miles an hour. And your nervous system has no frame of reference, right? So we're completely overstimulated, and we don't know that we are. So the idea that we can get control of that and choose to be downregulated, I mean, that just sounds really really powerful to me. You know, it sounds like it can make a real difference.
Yeah, to me it's about balance. You know, there's a situation, I mean, most of my work was focused around the heart and the cardiac autonomic nervous system, you know. And in simple terms, if you see your heart as a car and you see the nervous systems as a brake and an accelerator, right, then really it's how you're driving your heart. And what we're supposed to do is, you drive a car, bit of gas, bit of brake, nice and coherent, you see. Your car lasts longer, it travels better, it's more smooth, you get to your destination, you're not knackered, right, all that sort of thing. But in this lunatic world that we live in now, it's in the car, woof, and we're driving with the accelerator and the brake on as well, you know. So our brake pads wear out, we're exhausted. Because the brake's on as well as the accelerator, then the energy is used, so the fuel is used up much more inefficiently, you know. And so if you can take a step back and realize this is the most important thing out of this whole conversation, in my view, is become aware of your breathing. Become aware of your breathing, because your breathing is intricately and intimately connected with the way that your heart works. And that's how you do this. If you can allow your breathing to breathe you rather than you going in, you know, that's you, right, jumping into the process. That's an automatic process. If you can actually allow your heart to go into the rhythm of your breathing when you're sitting in relaxation, then what actually happens is, here's some more technical words coming up, you increase the levels of something called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. So in your brain, you actually secrete a biochemical substance that's like food for nervous system development. So it's a precursor and a substrate, if you like, for the information that now you're going to send it from the heart to create new positive neural architecture, which represents new habits of working. And what you do is, you don't work on the old habits, you just bypass them, because if they're not getting any energy, they'll just dissolve away over time. So you don't want to be working on stuff that's not working for you. You just want to increase the positive stuff that's working for you. Does that make sense? So, yeah, you know, you don't want to, don't focus on your defects, be aware of them, but then create very, very gently and over time, create new positive actions that stay below the level of your defensiveness. Because if you pop your head up, you're going to get shot, aren't you? So you have to keep below the level of the radar and be a bit more subtle and not let the left hand know what the right hand's doing, you know. So you have to be cautious and wise about how you go forward. Best thing to do is, if you're changing your behavior, don't tell anybody else you're doing it. I'm not saying don't keep secrets. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, if you're in an environment where everybody's stressed, they say, ah, you don't want to do that. That doesn't work. Right. And immediately you think, oh, yeah, you're right. And so you just get sucked back. Right. Why don't you need to put a lid on a bucket of crabs?
I don't know.
Okay. Right. It's because if any crab wants to try and escape, it gets virtually to the top. And then all the others gang up and pull him back down again, you see. And that's what I see symbolically is happening at the moment in the world, that people have got their own ideas, their own individual perceptions on how to be free. But the herd can say, come back here and stay with us. Otherwise, we will ostracize you. Right. Now, you've got to develop some courage to be able to say, well, that's all very well, but I need to be free for myself here. So I'll choose. You give me the fully informed information. I'll make my own mind up here, and I'll accept the consequences of the choices that I make. And I don't need you to force your opinions or anything else on me. I'll make my own mind up. Thank you. Right.
Fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. And does this all play in, Joe, to the I am approach, which I believe is your approach to work, to life? How would you describe
Yeah, it's
that?
Well, it's to life now. I woke up one morning and this is how it works, is I got, you want to call this approach the I am approach, and I thought, I've heard of that. Right. And I looked up, what is the I am? Right. And the I am is the ancient Hindu philosophy and other Chinese philosophies. The I am is that core essential self. It's your true self. It's your soul self. And that's the bit that we have to plug back into. And I am means innate asset management. So innate means skills and things that you're born with. So they're effortless for you. You don't have to train. You can train them, but you don't have to develop them, right, as such. You do develop them, but you don't create them. You see, they're already there. You're born with this set of innate skills. And that's why everybody's different. The asset management is, so you then find out, what am I really good at, and what do I do effortlessly? And then management means that you can then put your motivations on top of your internal drives, and then they'll be aligned then to take you forward. But if you've got motives on the outside that are different from the motives on the inside, so if you've got external moral drive and an internal moral drive and they're different, you'll always be in conflict within yourself, right? So the idea would be is, dig deeper, find out what's really driving in who you are from the depth, not what you've made up. Because all this head stuff's made up, isn't it? Pretentiousness, and it's like egomania. You have to sort of ditch that. Go back and start again. If you like, if you're a religious person, you could say, call this being reborn in spirit, if you like, you know. You get reborn to live your life in a different way from truth, rather than in all this made up stuff, because that's what pretentiousness means, being made up, doesn't it? And it's not that you're becoming a liar. It's just that, you know, you're taking on board all this information from external societal engineering and drives. And unless you actually see it happening, Right. It just overtakes you and you lead this sort of automatic life, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bit like your car, you know, again, you know, you should have the ability, if you want, to sit in neutral until you've really made your mind up where you want to go. So you're sitting in neutral, you're sitting in tickover, and then you should be consciously able then to say, right, I'm going to put it into drive now, right?
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's in there. Our perception is threat. The car's driving itself. So you've got no idea what direction you're going in or whether you really want to go there. You just go. So this is what I'm saying is your psychology and your physiology are linked together, right? But there should be a point where you can just sit there for as long as you like until you consciously feel, no, this is what would suit me. And then you're really being true to yourself. Then you mentioned, Tom, authenticity. You know, authenticness is someone says to you, do you want to go here? And you say, yes, I do, because you want to please them. But in your heart, you really don't want to. Then you're always going to be in conflict, aren't you? You know,
someone said to me,
you know, why aren't you paying attention to that person? And I'll say, because I'm not interested in what they've got to say. And they go, oh, you're supposed to be a spiritual person. I said, no, I'm just being honest. What they're talking about has got no relevance to what I'm interested in. Right. And that's where I've come to in my life. Right. I'm only attracted to what I'm interested in. And then they say, you selfish person. And I'll say, maybe, but maybe it's just because I'm being honest, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and you know what happens is, and this is what I found is, the more honest you are, the more you are yourself over time, people will just say, oh, that's what he's like. And they accept you then anyway. You know what I mean?
yeah, definitely. Yeah. And you mentioned just there, Joe, as well, like the ancient Buddhist, you know, take of I am. But a lot of the things you're talking about have been around for a long time. Hey, and it's only in more recent times that we're finding the science to kind of back up what, you know, the yogis and some of these practices. They've been around a very long time. Like, this is ancient stuff, right? This is
But that's what I've tried to do, is combine ancient wisdom with modern neuroscience, you know. And now, again, it's when we're first born, we sort of develop, and the child develops up then in the brainwave. So there's the medulla oblongata. So that's basically the breathing center, the heart center. And basically, from a psychological point of view, it's only a one-way track. And people can get psychologically blocked there, and they would sort of... they would exhibit narcissistic tendencies because they haven't developed outside of their individuality. See what I mean? They can't see anything else other than themselves, you know, and they're not a fault. It's just that there's been a block there where their physical nature and their psychological nature hasn't grown hand in hand, you know, and there's various reasons for that. You know, narcissists, you know, for example, politicians, no, don't say that. Couldn't help myself. Politicians are generally blocked in their medulla oblongata. But then what happens is, as we then evolve and emerge further and develop, we come to a bifurcation then. That's called the hemispheres of the brain, you know. And so now we've got one, and now we've got the other as well now. So there's a sort of polarity now, or a duality of thinking. So there's not just me here, there's something else outside of me as well, you see. So then we're supposed to take into consideration other people's feelings as well, you know. So you can see where I'm going with this. But in ancient Oriental philosophies, they believe that we have energy centers that are invisible. They're called the chakras. You know, the seven major spinal chakras. And they believe what the chakras are, right, are the invisible counterparts of the physical endocrine glands. And what they feel is they're invisible because it's to do with consciousness. And it's really consciousness that drives the creation of the physical body, because the physical body is like the end result of what's being processed in consciousness. Are you with me on this? So when you go to a lot of healers as such, you know, I'm a Reiki master, whatever that means. It just means that I can understand energy a bit more than most people, you know. So when you work with a Reiki healer, they're working on these invisible dimensions, because sooner or later, if you can deobstruct the problems in the chakras, then the endocrine glands work in a more balanced way. See what I mean? So my view is to work on the body and on these energy systems together. And then hopefully there'll be a fusion then, which leads to a more balanced point of view, you know. But you know, Tom, and you know, Chris, you get a sense of where people are hanging on to stuff, don't you? You know, you can almost get a sense. Chris and I were talking before about there's like different types of runners. There's trail runners who go out because they enjoy the outdoors and they're not bothered about time. And then there's road runners who want to increase it. What time did you do? I can't stand people at the end of a run who are waiting. What time did you do? You know, I'll say I finished, haven't I? You know, but and you know, when you're running or training and someone wants to come next to you and they start talking to you. I don't know how they do that, you know, but they're saying, what time are you going for? I'm not going for any time. I'm just trying to finish, you see. So I don't know why I got I got misdirected there. But what I'm trying to say is each individual has got a specific set of resources or skills or abilities that correspond with who they are at the deepest level. And if you're not working from that point, some people will call that a soul point or a soul resonance or a soul vibration. If you're not working from there, you'll always be incoherent and disharmonious and diseased or ill at ease with yourself. That's what I learned about the process that I went through. I was working from the wrong place. I was always trying to take on board new information so that I could fix my problem. What I really needed to was not get hold of anything else. It was to let go of everything. And then this other thing starts to emerge then.
Yeah. And as we get to the point where, you know, a lot of these things are on the rise, and then at the same, you know, a lot of depression, anxiety, things we've talked about is on the rise. There does seem to be more of it about. And then also stuff like breath work, stuff like yoga, it is becoming more, not mainstream, it's not there yet, but it's much more commonplace. It's much more, you know, it's out there. And would you see like these things combined, you know, the stuff that's happening and the stuff that can potentially help all coming through together, is that kind of what you class as part of the Great Awakening, as I believe you call it, Joe?
Yeah, it's definitely not about fighting anything, you know. I mean, modern medicine's got a lot to learn from ancient wisdom, and ancient wisdom's got a lot to learn from modern medicine as well. So it's definitely not about fighting. It's about merging. It's about collaboration. And it's about working together to find out what re-energizes a person more successfully so that they can make better decisions based upon a groundedness, if you like, or feeling secure in themselves. I mean, I talk about this informed consent, but in the end, if I don't know what to do, I come out of this confusion in my hemispheres. You know, there's like a hemispheric sort of asynchronization. I go into my heart, breathe mindfully, and maybe do some Tai Chi or even go for a run. And it's almost like those two parts of my head then start cooperating with one another, and all sorts of better solutions come up as well. So it's definitely not about fighting, because if you work out, fight and flight, right, is all about defensiveness, you see. And what people do is, I think we have to move to something called humility, where humility talks in, I don't really know fully, but I'm willing to learn more. That's what humility is. Pride says, I know, and my way's the best way, right? And that's where I was for years. I used to use all this knowledge to browbeat people into trying and seeing my way, right? And they were having a happy life and balanced, and I was killing myself, you see? So, you know, pride blocks you from seeing what's really going on, you know. And I know that I'm not talking about proper pride in enjoying doing something successfully. I'm talking about false pride here, based upon intellectuality, which is basically only sees a tiny bit of the whole picture, but thinks it sees everything, you know. And I'm only talking about what I've learned about me, you know.
Yeah, sure.
So, it's a fusion. Sorry, Tom. I would say it's a fusion. It's using everything, a best of all worlds approach to bring in bits and pieces from trial and error, being cautious as well, working with health professionals and medical people alongside non-medical interventionists for the benefit of the individual, not just to get your point across, really.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely. And there was one more thing on my list of things that I wanted to chat to you about, Joe, and you kind of touched on it there as well. And that's running, because I know you're a keen runner. And when did running enter your life? How did you kind of start getting involved in
that? Yeah, I wasn't a runner before all this started to happen, but when I was doing my PhD at University Hospital Aintree, right, the people I was working with, the medical people there, they started a running club. And because I was still a gross people pleaser, right, they said to me, do you want to join, you know? And I was still smoking at the time and everything, you know, had a bit of weight on and stuff. And I said, oh, yes, I'd love to. And I was lying, really, because I didn't want to. But anyway, cut a long story short, I started running around the quadrangle with them, you know. And I'd do about 5 minutes and I'd be absolutely exhausted, you know. So I'd sit down, have a cigarette to think about what I was doing. Now, this is no shit, this, honestly, I'll tell you the truth. Right, and this thought came to me. This is how it works. If I didn't smoke, I'd probably be able to run better than further. And I put the cigarette out and I haven't had another cigarette since, right? And that's why I believe intuitively people change at exactly the time that they're supposed to change, not because they're forced, because I think any force to change causes repression and not expression. It's got to come intrinsically and innately from within to kick out the old bad habits and replace it with a new natural habit. And then from there, I went on. I did my first, they used to have corporate 5K challenges in Liverpool, you know. So I did my first Liverpool corporate run around the city centre and I loved it. I absolutely loved it, you know. And I went then from 5K, moved up to 10K then over time. And then I did the half marathon. The first half marathon was Helsby half marathon many, many years ago. It was bloody freezing. It was in the middle of winter. Right, there was ice everywhere. I had blisters on my feet. I couldn't walk for days afterwards, but I had a certain sense of accomplishment and thinking, I really, really love this, running in the outdoors. And what it is I don't go for times. I have a thing on me where it would be lovely to do the same time as last year. And if I can beat it, then I'm actually doing well, you know. But I don't go for, you know, my best time in a marathon was something like 4 hours or something like that. I was happy with that. I was just under 4 hours, right. I don't go into marathons. I'm just training now for my 17th marathon. And I'm doing the London virtual marathon again, you know. And last year I did 8 half marathons, not to try and prove anything to it. I don't tell many people. I just go in them and plod on. And in myself, I'm thinking, you're doing all right, son. You know what I mean? You're not doing bad. And then something says to me, there's always room for improvement, though, you know. And other things I've done is the Cross Mersey swim as well. You know, I love swimming and I do a lot of chili dipping and all that sort of business because something in me just loves being natural and being outdoors, you know. And I'm not like one of these wimps who wears a wetsuit or anything like that. I have a pair of Speedos that I've had for about 10 years that hang off me and people don't want to come anywhere near me when I've got them on because, you know, they're just terrified that something's going to drop. Anyway, that's another story. But you know, I go in there and mindfully, you know, I just get into the water, breathe away the cold and all that, and then I'm up and running or up and swimming, you know. So I think what I'm trying to say is the running, along with synchronous breathing, it seems to put me in a place where I can just sort of go on forever. I did a run a couple of years ago, a 35-mile endurance run, just plodding on, plodding on, plodding on. And this is no lie. I got up the next day, felt a bit stiff, but was able to go to work and just carry on. These are miracles, considering that years ago I just wanted to die, you know. So I do have a full life now. There are certain things I still want to go for, obviously, because I set myself little targets. But there's other things that I want to do as well, you know.
Yeah, certainly. And just to wrap up, Joe, because, you know, I know we had a bit of trouble with the internet this morning, so we lost a bit of time. But just so you mentioned 10 minutes three times a day for the breathing, you know, if people who are listening, they think like that's something they want to give a go. Is that that was your recommendation, wasn't it, mate?
To enhance that, if you bring in a positive emotion, so for example, if you bring in, use your imagination to bring with it some thought, event, situation that brings with it a really what's the word I'm looking for? Vital and nurturing type feeling for yourself, a self-care feeling. You know, pick up a time when you really felt good about yourself and you know, you were all right with yourself. Bring that back. Once you've got the feeling that goes with it, dismiss the thought, stick with that feeling and breathe that feeling in and out. Now your head will try and jump in to say, this is bollocks, this is nonsense, this won't work for me. That's the thing that's obstructing you and taking you away from enjoying your life. So you have to not fight with it. You just say, look, hang on a second. I know you're there trying to protect me, but for the moment, I'm going to try this thing here and I'm going to give it a fair trial and I'm going to start talking to my heart now. So for the moment, head, shut it, right? And I'm just going to, and then you have to sort of, the way I do it is I listen in with my left ear into the center of my heart, right? And I get a sense of, nothing talks to me or anything, but I get a sense of a stream of thoughts will come to me that are positive but or realistic, which will say, well, what about that? Maybe consider this. How about this? And then things started to lighten up then. One big thing I've realized is gravity means seriousness, you know, and gravity and being affected by gravity takes you to your grave. Okay. Levity, which means lightheartedness, is the opposite of gravity. And levity counteracts gravity, brings in a balance, right? And it helps you to expand your mind, get better thinking and go forward. The other thing I would also think is, it's not that people are negative, they just don't know yet, but I would stick with the winners. Stick around people and discuss with people solutions, not problems, right? And discuss, well, I tried this. Now, Tom, you might say to something to me like, for example, table tennis works for me. Well, that wouldn't work for me, but at least you shared it. And then I might say, well, I might have a go at that table tennis. Have a try of it. See if it works, because you may get the biggest shock of your life. You might just be a brilliant, you know, not that it doesn't matter whether you're good at it or anything. It's the feeling that it brings with it, really. So The other thing as well is, you know, I believe that the way forward for the world is, and this is where I get on my soapbox now, is something called collective individuality. It means not being the same. It means being collective, going forward to improve the quality of our own lives and trying to help other people by being yourself first and foremost. So with that comes with tolerance of other people's behaviors. You know, you don't have to tolerate bad behavior, right? But you can learn a lot from people who are flourishing now and flowing and enjoying themselves, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, it really, really does. You can only, I personally believe you can only change the world from a place of compassion, you know.
Yeah.
And, if you be the change, then it's easier for other people to get on board, right?
Yeah, no, I agree, mate. And that change, as I say, is it has got to come from within. And you can listen to people saying it, but see if they're actually practicing it. You know, there's, you know, they say don't judge, but, you know, when I say judge, I'm talking about discernment and discrimination and evaluation, not judging good or bad. But I get it. I discern with the feelings I get now, and I can sort of sense the energetics of an individual, whether they're positive and open and flowing people and therefore authentic and truthful, or whether they're just blag merchants. How do I know? You can't blagger, because I was blagging. For the first 38 years of my life, I was just blagging everything, you know. I was just making everything up on the spot and didn't have a clue. And now I've got more of a clue, but not much more, and I'm always willing to find out more, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, perfect. And that feels like a really lovely sentiment to end on there, Joe. So thank you very, very much for joining us, mate. And I do apologise for all the mix-up at the start.
But, no problem.
Yeah, that was fantastic. That was great, mate. So I'm just
cheers, Joe. I'm very aware that I've been very silent, but that's like really, really blowing me away, man. That was amazing. I just didn't want to disturb any flow of conversation. That was absolutely golden.
Chris, I made up to see you after all these years. You look better than you did last time I saw you, mate. Right. And hopefully we'll meet in the flesh.